Welcome to the Hot Lawn Podcast. Kevin Acey, Potter's beat writer. I'm refreshed.
The sports editor of the Union Tribune, Ryan Finley, is with me. Here we are. It is Tuesday. I've caught up so much that I actually know what day of the week it is. This is just fantastic. Thank you to Jeff Sanders for covering that weekend series. And the Padres play the Guardians.
Yeah.
Ryan, I got a lot of ways I can go with this. A lot of ways. But where do you want to start with the 31 and 34 Padres who are about to start a six-game homestand?
Yeah, I think we should start real quickly with a look back at Denver. Okay. Padres took 2 of 3. And played well, I thought, on at least 2.5 of those 3 games. The thing that gnaws at you, and fortunately for the Padres, they haven't had a lot of games like this, is what happened Sunday. They were 3 outs away from walking out of Denver with a sweep. Ryan McMahon hits a ball into the sun. I mean, just crushes a game-tying home run. There's then a 90-minute rain delay, and when they come back, Rockies win on a walk-off home run. Kevin, it's June, and it's the Rockies, and I'm never going to spit on taking 2 of 3 from somebody. But, man, there's a big difference coming out of there with 2 of 3 and coming out of there with a sweep.
It would have. There is. I think, fortunately, they had an off day because, you know, starting today, it's like, is there really a difference? I mean, yes, absolutely there is. Inside there, they know that the way that they were forced to use their bullpen, and you can argue they were forced by a decision to have Ryan Weathers go, you know, but who knows? Whatever, we can get into that if you'd like. But they were forced. I mean, Brent Honeywell's on the mound. Tom Cosgrove is on the mound, if I'm not mistaken, in high leverage situations. And that's not how you draw it up, except for when you've used your guys. Hader, Martinez, heck, Garcia. You'd expect more out of Garcia than what you got from him on Sunday. So I think they know what happened. But here's what I think, because I'm kind of like in agreement with you overall, is what I think when a game like that happens is, my first thing is, oh, you know, those happen, right?
Okay. They do, yeah.
But this Padres team can't afford them to happen much more often because of the other games that we have spent so much of the first 2.5 months talking about. It's like, how about now, you know, remember I was off. So it was just yesterday that I'm doing my book and going back and looking over, watching highlights, making sure I understood what happened over the weekend. And holy smokes, did they blow a lot of opportunities on Sunday in Colorado, the offense. Now, again, those happen, but you can't, right now, okay, fine, it's June, fine. They can't keep happening to this team.
And this is a team that's got to get hot. And, you know, the further we go into this season, the more imperative it becomes that they get on the right side of 500. I mean, I think that if you're talking about baby steps for this team, I think if you're a fan, the goal is, number one, get to 500. Because 500 puts you squarely in the playoff race. Indicates that you're playing better now than you've played at any point so far this season. And then number two, you sort of make your run. This is where you've got to start sweeping teams, starting with this week's series with the Guardians and then the Rays, both of which, by the way, tough outs. I get it. But, I mean, now's the time where you got to get hot. I think 2 or 3 the rest of the season. Yeah, go ahead.
No, the Guardians come in. It's some really good pitching matchups that we can go over. Yeah. The Rays are obviously far more difficult outs. Let's look at the situation to your point. The Padres are 2.5 back in the wild card race. The Giants have the final wild card spot. The Padres play the Giants after this 6-game homestand for 4 games. So let's just say the Giants are off on Thursday. So by then there won't be a half. Let's give the Giants a half game. Let's say that the Giants do a little better this week. And they have they get a half game. So they're 3 games up when the Padres go there. It's at that point, right? Like the Padres go 500 this week, right? To take 2 of 3 against the Guardians, 1 of 3 against the Rays, and they're still 3 games under 500. They take 3 of 4 in San Francisco. I realize that's difficult, but are you a better team than San Francisco? You come home, you play Washington, you take 2 of 3 or you sweep the Nationals. By the end of next week, the Padres are in a wild card spot.
Yeah.
Unless the Phillies and Reds got super hot and all that. What I just said is fantasy, right? We count on nothing with this Padres team.
No.
But like, that's how close they are, which is why it is silly to be like doom and gloom. But our whole point here is, you heard what we said there. We said You take 2 of 3 from the Guardians. You take 3 of 4 from the Giants. You take 2 of 3 or you sweep the Nationals. There are 97 games. After today, there will be 96 games left. You can divide that evenly, 6 times 16, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So 10 and 6 every 16 games. Now, you know you're not going to do that.
Yeah.
You can go some 9 and 7s in there. You can have some 8 and 8s. That means you need some 12 and 4s.
Exactly.
And the Padres are not capable of that so far in 2023. So
right,
now is the time. We've been saying it, but you got to get hot. That's right. What all these teams where I've been providing context, which is can also be interpreted as excuses, right? I can whatever for this Padres team, but all those teams that were under 500 in June that ended up going to the playoffs and even the World Series and even becoming world champions started to win 7 of 8, take a loss or two, mm-hmm. 1 8 of 10, take a loss or two, 1 5 straight, took a loss or two, 1 7 straight. That's what needs to happen with the Padres now. Now, look, they're 11 and 8 over their, I think it is, 11 and 8 over their last 19. Okay, cool, cool.
That'll play, yeah.
Cool, cool. You're heading in the right direction. That 11 of 19 does not get you in the playoffs, though.
Right, right. Well, and this is where, and Kevin, I don't think, I know you and I talk about this all the time. I'm not sure that it comes up enough out in the world. This is where the new balanced schedule actually hurts them, right? The Padres, what they are losing in as part of this new schedule in which they get to go to Yankee Stadium and do all this other stuff is more games against their National League West rival. If you're trying to hurdle the Giants, if you're trying to catch the Diamondbacks who are running away with the division somehow, I mean, head-to-head games, it's the fastest way to do it, right? You gain one, they lose one. That's not going to be the case so much this year because of the new schedule. I mean, when was the last time they played a National League West team? Outside of the Rockies last weekend. Fine. But you know what I mean.
Yes.
Yeah, when was the last time we saw the Giants? When was the last time we saw the D-backs?
For sure. There's no way to argue with you, except maybe those teams wouldn't be where they are and the Padres wouldn't be where they are. This balanced schedule also gives you the chance to play the Tigers. It gives you a chance to face the Guardians. Hey, the Guardians are in second place in that horrible division. And like I said, Tanner Bibby coming in here, Aaron Civale, Logan Allen, not that Logan Allen, a better one. That's three good pitchers coming in. You got two rookie pitchers. That's really good. This is going to be a difficult series to score runs for this Padres team if they're not, better than they have been for a lot of the time against good pitchers. But the balanced schedule, I think, does help you out to a certain extent. But, yeah, absolutely. That's why these four games against the Giants are going to be huge.
Yeah, absolutely. It's absolutely. Wait a minute. This Logan Allen is not that Logan Allen?
No, it's not amazing.
This isn't John Cena's guy? Okay.
The Padres traded Logan Allen, who started out really well for the Padres as a part of the Franmil Reyes, got Taylor Trammell back in 2019. That was a part of that deal. Logan Allen, I think he started out fairly well for the Guardians as well. And now he's, I believe, a Rockies minor leaguer. I think he's still with the Rockies. Mm-hmm. So this is a different Logan Allen who did not bet John Cena a dollar that he would make the major leagues. So I assume that John Cena will not be here tonight. But, and this kid is pitching really well. So you got some good young pitchers facing Musgrove tonight, Michael Walker tomorrow, and Yu Darvish. So you've got good veteran pitchers going for the Padres. And all three of those guys seem to be what they are. I mean, my favorite part about Michael Walker is you can hardly believe that he's what he is, but he is, right? Like, he's just mixing it up. Love it.
Right. This Logan Allen is a right-hander, has an ERA of 1.3.
Yes, should have mentioned that.
3.31.
Right away.
He's 3-2 with an ERA of 3.31. 24-year-old guy, young guy. Should be interesting. Kevin, another guy who is who he is, or at least he was until recently, is Nelson Cruz. The Padres, it appears, will activate him as soon as today. This strikes me from my seat as make or break time for Nelson Cruz. What do you think?
Okay. I think it's fair. Mm-hmm. I think the Padres, it might have already been break time had he not hurt his hamstring, right? There was some talk about, well, we're going to have to make a decision here pretty soon. No one wants to make this decision, but that could be the case. I don't have his numbers in front of me. It was really bad. He's having trouble with spin. He's having trouble still even with the fastball. What has happened is early on, it was like, he's just such a smart player. He obviously still has something left in the bat. that he would go into maybe like a little mini slump and you wondered what was up with Nelson Cruz. And then he'd just blister a double or like 107 mile an hour single. And that hasn't happened yet. He hurt his hamstring trying to beat out an infield single. I'm not saying that he wouldn't have run like the wind or as close to the wind as Nelson Cruz can get had he been hot. But, man, he was getting down that line trying to get himself his first hit in a long time. And, you know, the fact is he's going to be 43 July 1st, I believe.
July 1st. Yes. Okay. A day before I turn 43, Kevin. Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So I have a vested interest in him staying in the league.
I can picture you getting down that line and the hammy kind of, you know. Let me guarantee you that I would as well.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it's yeah, I mean, this is – I have a vested interest in Nelson Cruz staying in the big leagues because I think he may be the one guy older than me. He and Rich Hill.
Well, yes, he's the one guy playing in the well, not in the field, but, yeah, he's the one, quote-unquote, position player.
You're right. Kevin, I think that the presence of Gary Sanchez further complicates this if you're Nelson
Cruz. Oh, yes, excellent point.
Because he is what their best-case scenario on Nelson Cruz was, right? I mean, a right-handed veteran hitter who will crush a pitch every once in a while, give you a real threat in the middle of that order. I'm not saying that both these guys can't play at the same time, but Gary Sanchez is probably better served as a DH half the time in a perfect world. And that's Nelson Cruz's job, right? Right-handed DH. Nelson Cruz isn't going to play first or the outfield. Is there a world where both of these guys can coexist on the same roster?
Maybe if Cruz gets hot, yes. And is it possible they could carry three catchers? I mean, do you want to go? Look, Bob Melvin's got no problem at all, obviously, not from the start of last year, risking that you would lose your DH at some point in the game by, you know, when Nola catches, having Sanchez be the DH. He used to do when Nola could hit, he had Nola as the DH and, Alfaro catching. I believe there were some times that Camposano was catching, Nola was DH. But Bob Melvin has no problem with that. I don't know if you go the whole season like that. I don't know you go deep in the pennant race or the playoff race, whatever we're calling it now, when you're going for that final wild card spot. I don't know that you do that. With the bench the way it is now, I could see conceivably having three catchers. I mean, they have such versatility in players, right? That it's like, really, is it that big a deal that you would have two catchers on there? One of them is your DH. But no, I think your point is entirely valid that this is a very important time for Nelson Cruz and that Gary Sanchez makes that even more so. It was important before Gary Sanchez came. And I'm picturing my last conversation with someone about Cruz's standing. Sanchez had barely arrived. Maybe had hit his first homer. There wasn't any thought that Gary Sanchez was going to be your, like, you know, in the lineup virtually every day, either as DH or catcher. So it was more of, look, how much longer can we go with Nelson Cruz like this?
Right.
And it was a flyer. This is not a... This is nothing other than how are we best served here?
Yeah. And this is a franchise, I think, that does put a real emphasis on and prize positional versatility. And Nelson Cruz is a guy who does one thing. Mm-hmm. And if he's not doing that one thing well, and every game matters, Kevin, it's June and we're talking about how important it is to win 8 out of 10. If every game matters, you can't waste a roster spot on somebody who – he's supposed to do one thing well and isn't doing it well.
Here's the thing, though. You've got a little bit of time because I'm not sure who better serves them at this point. Yeah. Are they going to make a trade now? What it is you're trying to find out, can Nelson Cruz help you as you go toward the trade deadline and you see where you're at? And can we acquire a bat to be a DH? Can we acquire a bat to be a corner outfielder? And you're trying to position your roster that way.
Sure. Any speculation or sort of informed speculation on what the corresponding move might be?
Brandon Dixon. I mean, I think Brandon's had some really nice at bats. Mm-hmm. When Cruz comes back, I'm not sure what there is there.
Unless Brandon Dixon's in the right field mix regularly, and I'm not. Who knows? I mean, it appeared that way when the Padres were in town 5 days ago. And then they go to Denver, and no, the outfield was too big. So Right. That's the question.
They're going to be going to San Francisco where right field is just a bear. Look, Brandon Dixon did just fine. And teams, if Brandon Dixon had a 900 OPS, I wouldn't have any question that this was, you know, but he, again, just like when we're talking about Nelson Cruz, like who's like really making the Padres smile and go, oh man, we really need to find a way to get this guy into the lineup.
Gary Sanchez. And that's it. I mean, well, and here's the thing, Kevin, the fact that we're talking about the guys who Gary Sanchez, who was not part of this team as recently as 3 weeks ago, Nelson Cruz, who is expected to be a platoon designated hitter. Mm-hmm. We're talking about all these guys because, again, sort of the big four, they're getting closer to doing what the Padres have signed them to do, but they're still not 100% back yet. I saw some encouraging things, I thought, out of Xander Bogaerts this weekend. I don't know how closely you were watching that. It seems like Manny Machado, I mean, we can talk about that catch that he made all day, but, you know, with his bat, it seems like he's getting closer to being back. But this is still a big four that's struggling. I mean, taken as a whole.
Fernando Tatis has a hit in 9 of 10. He has multiple hits in 6 of 10, including the last three. He has a 1,300 OPS in June. That's the 10 games that I speak of. Mm-hmm. Other than that, yes. And they have not been able to get it going collectively. Manny hasn't got like that hot because Manny Machado is perfectly capable. As a matter of fact, it would be a shock if once or twice a season he doesn't go on one of those a longer run, a 20 game run of what Tatis looks like right now. Mm-hmm. Even better. I mean, like just different because his hits are different than Tatis's. Like, you know, Tatis makes stuff happen, right? Mm-hmm. Machado just hits the ball hard and gets on base. And that hasn't, we haven't seen that for an extended period of time. You're right. Mm-hmm. Soto has cooled off. Now he was going to cool off a little, but he's cooled off a lot and he did it in Colorado. So, you know, whatever. Good to see Bogaerts back and getting on base. Look, the last 2 days in Colorado, the runners in scoring position, they cooled down. It would, you know, This offense is still miles better over the last 3 weeks, three and a half weeks than it was most of the time prior to that. But it's not what it should be.
Right. I think especially after Wednesday, right? Wednesday was the series capper at home against the Mariners. Pardon me. Juan Soto gets 5 hits. Padres look as good offensively, I would argue, as they have at sea level all year. And then they go into Denver and you go, here it comes, right? 13 runs a game, blowing them out of the water. And you see a little bit of that in game one and then really not at all the rest of the series.
Right.
This was not a team that was taking Coors Field by storm. And again, you still take 2 of 3, right? Nobody's too good for 2 of 3, but you worry that the way they played, I mean, it was tight, relatively low scoring games in two of those three games.
Yeah. I haven't done a scientific study here, but the Rockies almost always have a winning record at home. No matter how crappy the Rockies are, which is most years, the Dodgers go in there and drop 1 of 3 all the time, sometimes 2 of 3. Like, it's a bear to play there. Yeah. And it wipes you out. The Padres didn't take the guy who's starting the game for them tonight. The altitude gets you. If you didn't think, I didn't look at that schedule and see when my granddaughter's birthday was and rejoice, like literally out loud rejoice that it was when there was this silly 3-game trip to Colorado. I think those can be tougher to go in there, that airport that's basically in Kansas. It's so far away. And then be there for 3 days, play. They get exhausted. It's just a tough place to play. We started this out only because you're pushing me, Ryan, here. Am I pushing back in defense of the Padres? We started out by saying, that was terribly disappointing. The reason that Sunday stung for them so bad was all the games they've wasted. They can't afford this. They basically need to almost treat these like, you know, little mini playoff series. But that is a tough place to play.
Yeah. No, it is. It is. It is. And again, 2 out of 3, never going to complain about taking 2 out of 3, no matter who you're playing. Kevin, what do you know about the Guardians? In terms of, I mean, we talked about their pitching a little bit anybody you're excited to see just in terms of position players?
Always excited to see Josh Naylor because he's an exciting player. He's one of those guys you could argue there just wasn't a spot for him here. You didn't know what was going to happen with the designated hitter. You know, as usual, you know, the presence of Eric Hosmer at the time, you can argue that for quite a few players that have gone on to, you know, be sparks for other teams. There just wasn't a place for Josh Naylor here. I love to see him doing well, for sure. I haven't checked recently, and my bad. I took advantage of these 5 days. I apologize, but I haven't checked to see Gabe Arias and what his status is. I know he's been up quite a bit for them. Every once in a while, I'll see him as a contributor there. I know that Cal Quantrill has struggled recently. He's not scheduled to pitch in this. I'm not sure what the situation is with Cal Quantrill. When I saw he wasn't scheduled to pitch in this series, I was like, all right, whatever. But yeah, Josh Naylor is the guy that I'm very excited. You have to be excited to see Jose Ramirez, one of the best players in this game, the third baseman for the Guardians. Just honestly, just an awesome player.
Real quick, I'm going to say this quietly. Remember when he was almost a Padre?
Yes. Okay. Don't bring that up to the Padres. They really believed that they were going to get him. And then Jose Ramirez, who's just a phenomenal player, basically in virtually every way. And I think it's only better in that he doesn't really look like he would be if you just saw him on the street. It's not like it's Fernando Tatis Jr., the physique. The fact that he took the money he took to stay in Cleveland, and his explanation was basically his wife likes it, his family likes it, and how much money is enough? Guy left like $200 million on the table. Like, I love that. I loved him already, and I love him even more for that. That's not to say that I don't say, go get yours, guys. Get whatever you want. But Jose Ramirez chose happiness for him and his family. And by the way, Cleveland, totally underrated, and he doesn't have to be there in January.
That's a great point. There's no expectation that you're there working out all summer or all winter long. Josh Bell, also a Cleveland Guardian, by the way.
Even if I'd remembered that, I wouldn't have mentioned as what I'm looking forward to. Nothing against Josh Bell. Fine human being. Was here for 2 months and didn't do much.
Yeah.
One big home run.
Yeah.
Is a fun. He's a machine. he's just a lot of fun and a pretty darn good player who'll find himself a job here in the majors, I think, for a long time.
Kevin, we could write a book on guys who got traded away from the Padres because they didn't know the DH was going to be around or they didn't know how quickly it would come. I mean, just thinking off the top of my head, Naylor, Ty France, Franmil Reyes. Who else? Of those guys.
Well, obviously, Ty France was my guy that I was thinking of and that I still think there's an argument that you kept him because – you know, you were close enough, you kind of knew. But then in 2019, when you got rid of Franmil, there was just no telling what was going to happen with the DH.
Right.
I know there's some others that I've lost, which is where preparation would come in better for me if I did that. But those are the two ones. Franmil, for sure. I know that he's, you know, kind of fallen off, but that was a big, big one. And Ty France, I mean, no, there's not a person here that didn't hurt them to have to get rid of Ty France. And when you say have to, because, you know, AJ Preller was in love with Austin Nola. And by the way, Jerry DePoto, the general manager of the Mariners, was in love with Austin Nola as well. Or he played Preller really hard because he basically made Preller overpay for Austin Nola after months of trying to get Austin Nola. So,
Jerry DePoto. Jerry DePoto is now in love with Ty France and Andres Munoz and more. And by the way, let this be. I mean, that's a guide, right? It's, Kevin, we see it on Twitter. We hear it from people we know. Everybody goes, they should go trade for somebody. They should go trade for somebody. Number one, who are you going to trade? Number two, who are you going to get? Number three, when people don't understand how a bad trade can set a franchise back. Good trades can propel them forward, man. But bad trades can set you back, and that Mariners trade is probably something that you'll be thinking about for a long time.
The trades that have been made in the last few years that haven't worked out or that you would say have not worked out yet, trades are ever evolving, have not come back to haunt this franchise because they've gone out and spent to put themselves, you know, where they are, where they got to last year, and they made more trades.
Right, right.
At some point, right? Yeah. Like if this bold move that they've made doesn't pay off, with the payroll and all that, then you will start to look at some of those and go, absolutely.
Yeah.
I can make the argument now that they don't get to the NLCS last year without some of those trades. There's a whole tree of AJ Preller's trades. I mean, just look at that Franmil Reyes trade, you know, and Taylor Trammell then was also a part of the Austin Nola deal. I mean, there's just this incestuous, all these trades are just together. And so you need to untangle them. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them have helped and they haven't hurt yet because of all the signings and the other trades. Mm-hmm. They could end up hurting you here and you could really lament a few of these.
Well, and here's the thing, not to belabor this point, but they thought Andrés Muñoz was their closer of the future. Okay. He then needed Tommy John surgery because he threw 105 or whatever it was, right? You trade Andrés Muñoz. In real time right now, you and I don't talk about the fact that the Padres don't have a closer because they traded Andrés Muñoz. They just went and traded another guy for the privilege of making Josh Hader the highest paid closer in baseball, right? So it's not as if that hole exists. It's that they've had to deploy large sums of money to fill a role that Andrés Muñoz could have filled for the league minimum, at least for another year or two. Right? More or less?
Right. And that's where we're at. And that speaks to, you know, the story that we ran last Friday, posted last Thursday. People talked about it quite a bit. Still talking about kind of like, you know, the shockwave of like, what really could, if things don't go well, things could change. The Padres were talking before this season about they can't continue like this with the highest paid closer and the highest paid this and the highest paid that. At some point, you have to supplement your roster and your starting lineup with guys that aren't making 20, 25 million, 10 million even. Right. You've got to have some minimum guys in there that are contributing.
That are good.
And the Padres don't have any of those in their system ready to go.
Right.
But they do eventually, sooner than later, need to get to where Jackson Merrill is starting. And they have a pitcher or two that are in there and that are starting that aren't making 16, 20, 30. Because the Yankees can't do that or don't want to, let alone the Padres. They can't do that. They cannot do this forever. So,
very interesting. Padres Guardians, 3-game series starting tonight at Petco Park. Guardians, Rays, Kevin, to me, two very different, interesting tests. And of course, we'll talk about the Rays here on Friday. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey. By the way, I love it. You got to show me your cup again. What is that? What, last week?
Oh, this is just old. This is old school. This is, I believe this was part of like our wedding set. I think it's the last surviving 29 years later. It's got a chip in it that I should probably not even be using it. But I saw it. I said, hey, buddy, I haven't seen you in a long time. So I used that today.
I love these little windows into Kevin Acey's life.
Yeah.
I think it's great. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.